Special report from Starfleet Command. Caitlin has been grounded this week for stealing the NX-3 and writing... Gamma. Thank you.
They do the Greek symbol.
Yeah, no, I know, but I didn't know what the hell the third one was. The NX-Gamma and writing Vulcans Go Home in the Clouds with skywriting.
Oh, dang. I was going to go for the bounty hunters have come and collected Caitlin.
Ah.
But dang it, you found the other one.
So, it's a three-hander today. I am Chris, and joining me today are...
Bounty Hunter Ames, looking for Caitlin.
Hutshot Pilot Jake. Oh, I should go get my aviators out of the car.
You should.
Oh, yes.
But
yes.
Then I wouldn't be able to see shit.
Oh my god, I saw this small child at brunch yesterday wearing aviators and looking like he just thought he was the hottest shit. And I was like, I really hope you grow out of this phase and are embarrassed by the photos of you. Looking like this.
I mean, I was that kid in high school, man.
And he's so proud of those photos of him.
I had so many. I had like the actual Ray-Ban. I still have them.
I mean,
like, I've owned them for 25 years.
Some people can pull it off. This kid is too young. No one that kid's age can pull off aviators.
Without looking like your dad put you in aviators, or...
Yeah, but he looks like he's like, like, this kid is like, if you don't grow out of this phase, you are going to be a total douchebag for the rest of your life.
I mean, you know, it's Biden's bringing it back. All the kids these days want to be cool, like the
Biden.
President.
Yeah, like a 85-year-old
man. It's no saxophone, but it is pretty cool.
they're not inherently...
Oh, like Harry Kim.
I think
so
the
cool.
Aviators are pretty cool. I think they're among the cooler sunglasses.
Well, just to be fair, like, I should explain. I don't mean that, like, you can wear them and look perfectly good and normal. This kid, though, clearly thought he was just the hottest shit.
Oh, well...
It's more the kid than the glasses, but the glasses were endemic of what was obviously a larger personality issue with this child. Yeah, no, honestly, my fat head, like, aviator and aviator knockoffs are some of the only sunglasses that actually fit me, usually. Mm. But the problem is, I look terrible in aviators. I look like a cop. Not cool, so I don't wear them.
You could rip off the cop look. If you shaved your beard and just left the mustache.
Oh,
that's
no.
True. I would look like a super trooper. Anyway, so what the hell are today's episodes here on A Star to Steer Her By, episode 341?
Whoa!
Why they are...
Whoa.
First Flight.
Oh.
And Bounty.
Hey, dear.
Yeah.
Bounty would be fine if you ignored half the episode.
Yes. But we'll get to that. First up is First Flight, which would be fine if there was any tension. So Archer and then they found what they think is a dark matter nebula.
Oh, right. There was a frame story.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And they're like going
to
use...
I usually like frame stories,
one. There's like special charges they're going to use to try to actually see it because they can't because reasons I can't... I don't know.
Dark,
I don't care.
Yeah,
because
the dark matter...
Yeah, but there was something about it may not have even existed. I don't know.
We have to prove the Vulcans wrong yet I fucking again.
Well, no, actually, this was working off of their basis for once. They were like... It was...
Well, they were saying, oh, they don't exist in this strong a concentration. No,
oh, that's what it was.
Vulcan, look at
right,
my ears.
Right. So, yeah, anyway, they're going to go do this thing, but then John gets a call, and it's
Forrest.
Forrest, thank you. Jesus.
Admiral Daddy.
Yeah, no, that's where I realized, like, oh, you're his surrogate father. I don't know why it took me this long to realize this.
Hmm.
So, yeah, Admiral Father calls and is like, John, your old... frenemy A.G. Robinson has died climbing Mount McKinley, now Denali.
Yeah, they renamed it back to McKinley sometime between now and
the
22nd century.
Now, to be fair, he said he died while mountain climbing. So I'd like to posit that he didn't die by mountain climbing. He died of food poisoning on a mountain.
I forgot I had a shellfish allergy and didn't bring an EpiPen. So then we get a flashback to the early days of the NX program where we have some beefed up Phoenixes that have been fitted with a smaller version of Archer's dad's engine that they're trying to test. Archer and Robinson both want to be the first pilot. Robinson gets it. His ship kerplodes. The Vulcans are like, well, that's enough of that. And for some reason the humans go, okay.
Robinson somehow survives.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
They steal the... Luckily, backup ship they had, do the flight, prove it works. Forrest has to, you know, yell at them in front of the Vulcans for what's the word? Appearance's sake. And then they let John have the Enterprise. The end.
Oy.
Here's the thing. There were so many
elements. Like, I loved this idea of, you know, they very clearly were like, all right, we are going to base this so heavily off of, like, early actual, like, space program
shit. Oh, yeah. Have you seen the right stuff?
No, somehow. But, yeah, that's what I mean. I was like, clearly they were going for that. Like, I seen, you know, I am aware of it, its tone and style. So, yeah, they're going for that. They're going for this kind of
Boys Club
early space race thing. And it was neat in that regard. But that wasn't really the focus. The focus was this story that we knew the ending to. Because, like, okay.
Oh, yeah, we know Archer doesn't get drummed out.
Which T'Pol literally says to him, making it more obvious.
Right, yes. Like, you should be disgraced, sir.
Yeah, but it's just like, not only that, you know, but like, obviously Archer gets the Enterprise. Obviously he's not kicked out of Starfleet. Obviously Robinson doesn't die when his ship explodes, because we know he died on a mountain of poisoning.
Yep, clearly.
So, like, and again, we've talked about this before, how, like, yeah, with any of these shows, you know your heroes are pretty much always going to get out of it. Unless it's a season finale and someone didn't renew their contract.
Yeah, unless it's Game of Thrones.
Yeah, but like a show like Star Trek, you know, week in, week out, the major characters are going to make it out. But you can still, the interest, the tension can be around, all right, how do they get out of this latest predicament? This one didn't manage to have that. Like, it's like, okay, we know this is all going to turn out fine, but there was never a sense of like, I'm really invested in how they manage this.
I mean, you've just described every episode of Enterprise.
That is true. But this one, it's compounded by the fact that we're, I said this to Caitlin while we were watching it, because it's all flashbacks, this is a prequel in a prequel.
Yep.
And what was really obnoxious was, we moaned before about their little winking nods to the future series.
Oh, what if you had a Vulcan with you on your ship? Oh.
It's like, guys, come on. Jesus Christmas. You know, like, there were elements that I wish had been in a much better episode.
I wonder if it's because Jake and I just watched The Right Stuff right before watching these episodes.
Not funny. We watched it because we were watching this.
Okay.
It wasn't like a coincidence.
Yeah, yeah. I said, oh, this would be a great time to watch The Right Stuff because it's been on our list of things to watch for a while now. Mm. It stars Sam Shepard as Chuck Yeager.
I always forget that.
He's excellent. He's very Chuck Yeager-y. So good for him. And the thing about The Right Stuff is, you know, since it's the early days of test pilots learning to be astronauts, and it's all white men.
Yeah.
And it made me a little like, oh, an Enterprise, though. Like, they're going to embrace the diversity? Nope. It's all white men. And it struck me as very out of place. Like, likening it to, like, we watch a lot of For All Mankind. If you're not watching For All Mankind, watch For All Mankind! It's so good. They go out of their way to say, like, it's a better statement to send an array of people into space than to just do white men.
Yeah, and I, you know, okay, so here's the thing, my thing about this episode. If this episode did anything, it was show us what could have been. Because we could have had Captain Keith Carradine, who would have been infinitely better. I'm sorry,
Tell us why.
I don't know, he just has a gravitas to him. He just has a way, his voice, his way of speaking.
He does sound condescending a lot.
Oh, he does.
But that's perfect. That's perfect for Archer.
Yeah, I just think he would have been a stronger choice after watching this. Well, you know what it is? Archer.
He does have, like, he is kind of, but he's also got, like, a cocky swagger that works with it. I mean, you don't have to like it, but you can see how it works as a whole. Archer is just very milquetoast, but angry.
Yeah. I think that's been my main complaint, is Archer has one mode, and that is go directly to angry.
Yeah, like, he is a just very upset man. And, like, this guy, at least, again, you don't have to necessarily like him, but you can look at him and go, like, I get it, you know? He's, like, a hotshot, cocky dick. And it even would have been interesting to see kind of this hotshot, cocky dick go out into space and then kind of get taken down a peg or two by space.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, that said, I think it would have been very interesting if Archer's competition had been a woman or a person of color, or, you know, just not another white
or
guy.
Not American, or not American in general. Yeah.
But I mean, I get that they were doing the right stuff thing, and sure.
I can kind of see, though, like, I know they had talked about having the whole first season be just prepping to go.
Yeah, the Earthbound, right?
Yeah, and like, in the hands of better writers, I could have seen how they could have turned this basic concept into a full season. Of like, we're testing shit out. You know, maybe you do a couple of time jumps. You know, you start out with like the NX Alpha Beta program. You work your way up to the other stuff, laying down the keel, blah, blah, blah. Again, though, I don't think this show could have pulled it off successfully. Yeah. I think it would have been very boring.
But it would have been interesting, I think, if we didn't know that Scott Bakula was going to be the captain, right? Like, if there was a
If there were multiple options.
If it was a legitimate thing.
Like the right stuff.
Like, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, if throughout the season we weren't sure, like, oh, is it going to be Keith Carradine? Is it going to be Scott Bakula? Is it going to be, can't think of a woman, Meryl Streep? I don't know.
I'd watch that.
I don't think they could have afforded her.
No, yeah, probably not.
Who was big on TV around that time?
I was going to say Kate Mulgrew, but that wouldn't work.
No, that wouldn't have, no. Playing
she would
another,
be an awesome starship captain, wouldn't she?
Playing another Janeway ancestor.
Let's say, Linda Hamilton.
Yeah. Ooh, I watched that. Okay, I think you found
okay, me. But then when they don't give it to Linda Hamilton, you stop watching the fucking show.
Well, yeah.
Because you're just like...
Wait for the cameos.
She kind of has fighter pilot energy.
She does. She looks great in Aviators.
Mm-hmm, we know that.
Fuck, can we get her on Star Trek? They're still making Star Treks.
Who else? Carl Weathers. You could have a black man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, I was thinking because of Mass Effect, Keith David.
Oh, Keith David, yeah,
he's also got a great voice.
Let me think, who else could be in the competition? Who would be our NX7?
We could have brought in what's his real name? The chap who was in the weird time planet episode of Voyager.
Oh, Daniel Day Kim.
Yeah, bring him on because they like bringing cameo people on as like regulars later.
Yeah,
Mark Alame.
That, but again, I don't trust that writing team to...
No.
And because it's this writing team, you'd also have to have a Frenchman who's an ancestor of Picard.
That's
true. They would definitely do that. Yep, they definitely
would. Edelbert Picard!
Yeah, see, these are the things that I trust, like, Ronald D. Moore on For All Mankind to write.
Because
he's thoughtful and thinks ahead, while these folks definitely don't. Like we said, like because this is a flashback, there's no tension. But because this is a flashback, it's told in that frame story.
Yeah.
Which, in the same season as Carbon Creek, a let me tell you a story
oh, that
with
was
this frame
season.
Story. It was. It's like, okay, we're just going to do the same fucking thing where it's Archer and T'Pol telling each other stories.
And T'Pol's was better.
There was tension in T'Pol, and this one's like, okay, cool.
I didn't mind this though. Like you're right, there was lacking in tension, but I thought that
on the Enterprise scale.
Yeah, on the Enterprise scale, as we're judging
with the,
on
with
a
the
curve,
grading curve.
Yeah, it wasn't offensive. It wasn't awful. It was just like I already know where this. I don't know exactly how they're gonna get there, but I kind of don't care. But I also know where it's going.
Yeah,
I mean, just the fact they had a convenient backup ship.
Oh, did anybody pick up on, actually, you know what this episode was lacking? Nobody banged Ruby.
Ooh.
As we know from Shuttlepod 1, everybody bangs Ruby.
Trip and Reed were into her.
I was sitting there, I was like, didn't they mention Ruby before?
She was the one that both Reed and Trip both know quite well.
Oh, God. I was sitting there and I was like, I feel like I recognize this woman. So I look her up. And of all things, what I think I must recognize her from, because it's like the only other thing I've seen her in, is Quest of the Delta Knights.
What the hell is that?
I don't know what that is.
It is a hysterically bad medieval fantasy. Like, it honestly, I don't know the history of its production, but it really does feel like a LARPing group somehow got together enough money to make a low-budget movie and went with it. They somehow got David Warner to be in it.
Holy.
He plays both the villain and the, like, hero's mentor.
Two roles?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he kills himself, in fact. And this woman's in it. I've only seen it because it's featured on Mystery Science Theater.
Oh, Lord.
And, she's in that. It's like, that must... Because everything else I didn't really know. So it's like, I think that's why I recognize her. It's a great episode of Mystery Science Theater. Never watched the movie on its own. It's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ruby was fine. She was just the waitress.
I think if they had aged her up a bit and had an older actress.
You're just making the right stuff
well,
again, Jake.
No, well, obviously. Well, the other thing.
So what you're saying is even she's a right stuff character, basically.
Well, there's a bartender woman who's like, but the thing in the right stuff is that she herself is also a pilot.
Yeah, she beat Amelia Earhart's flight record or speed record.
There you go. So what? Like, I think, like, again, in this one, you have Ruby, who's just, the waitress and the town pump.
Yeah, and yeah. She's also there to be like, oh no, don't fight! Yeah. Stop fighting!
Why can't we have a fucking interesting female character?
I love how long they were fighting before she goes, that's enough. It's like, you were enjoying that for a bit. I joked because she came, when she first popped on, I was like, oh, and there's one of Tilly's ancestors. Because of the hair.
Because of the hair. I was hoping she'd throw a punch and knock the both of them out so they'd behave.
That would have been
great. Or if she pulled a guy in and pulled up a shotgun from behind the thing and fired it in the air.
Favorite part of that fight. Now, this is probably just, honestly, for the sake of, like, the safety of the actors and the props. But in-universe, it's hysterical. When they start fighting, Trip dives forward, grabs both the beers, and runs away with them. It's like Trip knows. Save what's important. Let these idiots kill each other.
But did anybody pick up on the little name drop of Trip's boss?
I did.
Captain.
Chris is wearing the Jeffries shirt today.
Captain Jeffries, who we're presuming is Matt Jeffries, the designer of the Enterprise.
Yeah, who sadly died shortly after this episode aired.
Oh, well, at least he got to see a name drop on TV.
Ah, great. They name drop me in this show?
They constantly drop his name on every show, so...
I couldn't tell what I thought of Trip being involved in this thing versus the convenience of it all. It's like, oh, we have this actor, we like showing him because the women love him. And otherwise, it's just an Archer episode.
I think it's nice because it kind of gives like a little origin story to Archer and Trip's friendship.
Yeah.
For some reason, I was incredibly distracted because I finally did the math and realized this was supposed to be what, like... 12 years or so before where we're at in the show.
Yeah.
And I, for some reason, I thought it was going to be way earlier, and therefore the fact that Archer still looks the same age as he looks now got distracting for me for a while. But 12 years, maybe.
Well, I think what was interesting is in the very first flashback scene when he goes into Forrest's office, he's like acting very much like the young guy.
His voice was definitely coming more through his nose.
Yeah.
He tried to young up his voice.
And it's like, no, like, because you at first you're like, oh, is he supposed to be like a cadet, but he looks 50? Like, what's going on here?
You know, the first thing Caitlin said was like, wow, I love that they didn't try to make him look at all younger.
Yeah. Well, so here's the other thing about the timeline that bothered me. This program, the NX program, they in this episode is when they finally cross the warp 2 barrier.
Apparently, yeah.
But it's implied that like the
cargo ships.
The cargo ships are going, and we presume they've been going warp 2 for some time.
Oh yeah, how long have the cargo ships been doing this?
Apparently like
less than 12 years?
Yeah, cuz Mayweather was raised on a cargo ship, and regular, there's more than 12 years
but
old.
But maybe the ship was only a Warp 1 ship at that time.
Maybe they retrofitted.
Well, because and then there's that whole thing in Fortunate, where Fortunate Son? Fortunate Son, where the captain's like, oh yeah, these new Warp 4 engines are gonna make mine obsolete. I only got a Warp 2 engine. So it's like, okay, I just had assumed, and then like Trip makes fun of the Vulcans to be like, took you 100 years to make it to Warp 2, and it took us 98 years to make it to Warp 2. So fuck you.
Yeah, with some of your help sometimes when you feel like it.
I will say this does finally kind of like not enough, but it does. You do kind of actually get to see now what they've been telling us all this time about the Vulcans being kind of a pain in the ass.
They blew up their ship.
Well, right, but like here's the thing:
their ship to blow up.
Right, that's what I said. I was like, yeah, it's their ship. You maybe gave some advice, but calm the fuck down. They broke their own toy. You don't get to yell at them for it.
Now, here's the thing. Like, how much impact are the Vulcans having on the NX program? Because what I understand, they're mostly there to advise. They don't make any of the decisions.
No, but it sounds like their opinion holds a lot of weight with Starfleet Command for some reason. Like, that's the impression they give.
When I was 18, I bought for myself a bright red Ford Mustang GT. Muscle car.
Okay. Yep.
4 days later,
uh-oh,
I wrapped it around a lamppost. 4 days after that, I bought a bright red Ford Mustang GT. With the insurance purchase.
How many Vulcans were involved in this purchase?
Well, that's the thing. So, like, the whole time, like, my parents could have said, Jake, you fucking idiot. You've already destroyed one of these. why are you buying another one?
Yes, but in your case, it was pilot error. In A.G. Robinson's case, it was the whatever the problem Trip ended up fixing.
Some sort of injector
issue. Yeah, like when they're yelling at Robinson. Oh, was it? We didn't rule out pilot error. And A.G. Robinson's like, I didn't make pilot error. I kept going because Archer's point,
Archer was being a bitch because his point was like, you should have taken the fall for the ship because you blamed the ship, that's going to convince people that it's a bad design. But then A.G. Robinson would never fly again.
This is the closest they've come to calling Archer on being a Nepo baby.
Oh, he's big time a Nepo baby.
This is the first time the show has had someone call him on it to his face.
And, like, the fact that he just kind of expects that he's going to be, like, at the beginning, when he doesn't get the mission to do the first flight, he's kind of a bitch about it. And he goes up to, and, like, you know, you see, what's his fucking name? I keep wanting to call him Keith Carradine.
But Robinson.
A.G. Robinson. You see A.G. hanging out with his friends and having a good time, and they're celebrating. And then Archer has to come over and be the fucking wet blanket and, like, couch it in, like, I'm just ribbing you because we're old buddies.
But this is how I really feel.
Well, that's the thing. Robinson, too, is there with his friends. Archer's there alone.
Yeah.
He doesn't even have friends to, like, mope with him.
Like, you know when the group of people that were with Robinson were standing over there, like, one of them's eyes, Archer coming over, and he's like, oh, don't look up. Just look away. Just pretend you're distracted.
Like, Trip is the...
he's coming over.
Trip is the first friend he's had since he was, like, since his father died. I don't think Archer's ever had friends.
And this is why he has to befriend the galaxy.
Yeah.
He also might have an alcohol problem. He's constantly drinking in this episode.
Yeah.
Well, that was also, I think, just the right stuff kind of seeping in again and how they hung out in that bar.
And this is a sin committed by so many films and movies and shows. This is not an explicitly Enterprise thing, but of course, going to a bar and ordering a beer, please.
Well, this is post-World War III when capitalism has collapsed. And
there's only one kind. That, you know, they can get away with it.
The United Earth Brewing facility.
Yeah. I'll have a beer, please. Sadly, all that has survived is Michelob.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. They say that, but if they had name-dropped, like, give me a Bud, like, I would have been equally pissed off at the product placement.
Well, here's the thing. I don't even necessarily need a brand name necessarily. Make one up if you really want. It's not that hard. But even, it's always just a beer. It's like, okay, lager, pilsner, stout, like, even just have
special
them say...
Special of the day.
Yeah. You know, give me the...
What's new on tap?
Yeah. There we go. That's a great way to avoid... You don't just go a beer, but you also don't have to name drop a type or a brand or make up a brand. You know, I'll have a...
Oh, Archer's filler. A bikini guy.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Oh, you know what? I don't know. I don't know if I would have liked... I think kind of wish, and maybe I don't wish. I don't know. I had a thought that I wish...
Good.
That the Vulcans that Soval had been...
Yeah, I was confused that it wasn't him.
Like...
The impression I was under is that he's been there a while.
Yeah, and it would make, like, his adversarial relationship with Archer make more sense because he's known Archer for years to be reckless and an asshole.
Stole a ship. Oh, that's what I was going to say to your point earlier there, Jake. Like, you bought a car, destroyed it, bought the same car.
Mm-hmm.
Their case, though, is they bought two of the same car and fucked up one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You might as well drive the other.
Wreck the other.
Here's another thing, timeline-wise. So, it looked like AG blew up the ship somewhere out around Jupiter. Was that
yes.
What it was? Yeah.
Yep.
And then, the next scene, he's back at Starfleet. Did, like, they have a ship go out and get him?
The,
like,
Vulcans, probably.
The Vulcans ferried him home?
Maybe.
But he was still... But, like, he was just getting out of the escape pod. So did they just, like, go out there and, like, tractor him?
They do,
like,
have tractors.
They didn't even bring him into the ship to be, like...
Maybe. You
know, check him out, make sure he's there. Okay.
Or they had some little Warp 1 thing that they sent out to grab him with.
Still. So it's like, weeks later, probably, right? Like,
I get to Jupiter with Warp 1 pretty quick.
Yeah, I guess. A few hours.
Maybe. Yeah. Again, you know, on the Enterprise curve, not bad. Could have been better. A lot of its failings, you know, I think are also attributable to, again, just it was, unfortunately, just 20-ish years ago. And TV largely was just like, no, white dude, still the default, even on fucking Star Trek, which should know better. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like that bar fight was just, but my note was, oh my God, there's too much testosterone in here.
Mm-hmm.
Way mm-hmm. too much. Sorry, white. So period, man, eat period, white, period, men.
Yeah.
Exclamation point.
Yeah. I did like their little, their test flight suits, very, you know, clearly very NASA inspired, similar to what they actually wear when they go up in a shuttle kind of thing. I like that the ship was like just, you know, the Phoenix with time, money, and resources. But otherwise, like, yeah, it's the Phoenix, but beefier. Not sure, you know, like, again, actually it comes up in both cases. When Archer is going to go do this little nebula thing alone so he can mope. And T'Pol is like, you know, regulations say the captain shouldn't go anywhere on his own, right? And I was like, regulations should say this shouldn't be done by the two fucking senior most officers on the ship. Yeah,
why was the, I mean, granted, it's because he wanted to go mope.
Yeah.
But the captain should not be going off and just doing a science study. That no. seemed utterly bizarre. Send Hoshi.
And she's a linguist. You must have astrophysicists on board. Or whoever would do this.
None.
Like,
zero.
It's like, oh yeah, the captain should go on his own. So let's send the captain. But again, this, of course, is an old Star Trek problem. They constantly send the senior staff because, you know, it's a TV show. They're the main characters, etc. So it's reality and the needs of a TV show. Sorry. Rather, it's the needs of a TV show and the in-universe sense clashing. You know? Like, they would never send the people they constantly send. They would be sending junior people with maybe one senior officer to keep an eye on them.
Yeah, this is what the M5 said in, not the Doomsday Machine, the Ultimate Computer.
Mm.
Like, all the time. Like, no, we shouldn't be sending the people that you would send, Kirk.
Yeah.
You're wrong.
Yeah, but again, it's because it's a TV show, and you don't pay your major actors to just then send extras down to the planet to have the adventure every week.
Mm. I mean, Trip makes the good point of, if you're going into this Dark Matter Nebula, you should bring the engineer. And also, you know, he wants to mope too. He knew AG as well, and the two of you could mope together.
True.
And then you could tell the story to T'Pol, but oh no, that's just Carbon Creek. Mm-hmm. Son of a bitch!
Because nothing can happen to any of the other characters. But let's not even show any of the other characters this week.
Yeah.
Hoshi got one line.
Oh, yeah.
Anthony Montgomery sitting there going, now you know how it feels.
It's okay. He'll have plenty to do next episode. Nat.
I have one important line. And this is partly, I knew the story, but I was reminded of it when I was researching this episode. Because AG makes the distinct point, or somebody, Archer, one of them. Oh, what were Buzz Aldrin's first words on the moon? Because no one knows, because he was the second guy. You know what they were?
I googled it, so yes.
I don't know.
Beautiful view.
Oh.
Which is very nice. People should know that story. Yeah. That's a good line.
Well, did you read the whole thing, though?
No.
There's a bit of an exchange.
Oh, there's more? Tell me more.
Hold on. I'll bring it back up. Because then it becomes an exchange between him and Armstrong.
Oh. Was it planned or was it an on-the-spot exchange?
It feels like it wasn't scripted.
I just wet my fight suit.
So, interestingly...
Where should we pee?
According to an interview he did years later, Buzz Aldrin did say he may not have been the first man on the moon, but he was the first man to take a piss on the moon.
That's good.
So, yeah. Aldrin, beautiful view, to which Armstrong asked, isn't that something? Magnificent sight out here. And Aldrin answered, magnificent desolation.
Ooh, that's a good line.
It is. So.
Go Buzz.
Yeah.
Get him, Buzz. Oh, I did expect, speaking of pissing your pants, AG to ask if he could piss his pants because he was waiting for the flight. Because that's a story that, you know, came straight out of history, because that's what Alan Shepard did.
Well, there we go.
Because they're waiting in the rocket for fucking hours. And they're like, guys, I gotta take a piss. And they're like, don't. Don't. You can piss when you're back. But guys, I'm gonna do it. He got permission to piss himself in the rocket.
Wow, that's awful, having to go up in that, covered in your own pee.
Yeah, I also read a great little thing, because I was also looking into the right stuff, and that's that they have the other astronauts basically be the Capcom go-between, because they know each other so well, and because they know that if you're in that rocket, you're not going to tell them when there's a problem, but they'll hear it in their voice when there's a problem.
So Archer was mentioning that there was a third pilot, and he was like, oh, me... AG and
there were two others, I think.
Yeah.
Why did we never see them?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Then you'd have to pay more actors, write more lines, actually work.
Yeah, one of them, I think, was the one that there was an episode a little while back when Forrest was saying, oh, yeah, Soval said he would have rather had this guy be the captain than you, and it was one of those guys.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know. I think there's no fucking way Archer would still remain in Starfleet
maybe
after
this.
Maybe
it just goes to show that, like, the skill set required for a starship captain is not necessarily the same skill set for a test pilot.
Yeah, no.
Shocking.
No, although it does turn out, from very early days, one of the key things in Starfleet, just steal it to make your point.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes. Don't worry, though. If you succeed, there's no way that they'll throw you out.
Nope.
Yeah, I kind of wish that in the scene where they were getting dressed down by Forrest, that like, because it was in front of the Vulcans, and I kind of wish it was more shown us that, like, after the Vulcans leave and they're, you know, they're satisfied that Archer and AG got chewed out. That they leave, and then, like, Forrest, like, is like, good job, guys.
On the DL.
Yeah.
Pat on back.
Never do that again, but thumbs up.
But if you gotta do it again, go ahead.
Bounty, because fuck it.
Bounty! Good segue, Chris.
The better picker-upper.
Ah. Oh, not necessarily the better episode.
In Bounty, turns out, unlike the writers, the Klingons didn't forget that Archer escaped from Rerepente.
Continuity! Shocking.
So there's a price on his head, and Tellarite grabs him, and the Tellarite basically gets screwed over by the Klingons, so says, fuck it, and what is it? The Tellarite is just doing this to try to get a ship back, which is impounded by the Klingons, but he finds out it was stripped for parts, so there's really no point. So he helps Archer escape in a way that doesn't make it look like he helped him, so he doesn't wind up angering the Klingons.
He lets Archer escape in a way that will get Archer killed.
Yes, which is fine.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, like, Archer kills a whole bunch of Klingons on his way out.
So many.
Tons.
And in the fucking B-plot...
Oh, the worst B-plot yet.
T'Pol gets a bug that activates her pawn far. It's fucking wretched.
This time they've pawned too far.
Would it have been better if instead of trapped with Phlox, she were trapped with Trip?
No, because then they would have actually banged.
Dang it.
That would have made it worse.
Dang it.
It would have been better if rather than activating her pawn far, it was just strictly fucking with her ability to control her emotions.
Yeah, if she was just, like, angry and violent.
Yeah, if it was, like, unlocking her primal self without the sex, and there was, like, you know, maybe she's like, let me out of here, I'm feeling stuffy or whatever, and he's like, she's gonna fucking kill me with her Vulcan strength. Like, okay, that would have been a little better. They would have still been in their underwear the whole time, because decon room. But no, it had to be fucking Pon Farr. Ugh.
I know, I hate it. This is also directed by Roxanne Dawson,
yes,
who has,
yes,
you know, experience with Pon Farr.
That's true.
Oh, and the previous was directed by LeVar Burton.
Oh, I missed that.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Fine work,
LeVar. Well, yeah, again, he didn't write it, as we often say.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah. This episode, not a lot going on here.
I do have a compliment for it. I really thought it was clever what they did with the Tellarite makeup.
Clever?
Because, like...
How clever?
The one other time we saw the Tellarites was TOS.
Yeah.
With those horrible pig masks with the obvious, like, eye holes. So what they do is, like, all right, how do we modernize this, but still kind of hew to that for some reason? Like, bless them for doing it. So they've got these, like, heavy outer rings around their eyes, which kind of suggest the shitty eye holes of the old days.
Mm.
But it's much better makeup.
Oh, yeah. They can see out of it.
I'm sure. And Caitlin pointed out, too, as if to sort of, like, also build with that, the kind of little just black voids they had. They clearly put, like, large black contacts on the guy. So they were like, all right, we're not even going to try to, like, make those specific masks, but we will call back to them in very subtle ways.
Mm.
And I kind of love that, you know?
And don't worry, there's going to be an episode where they retcon how they got that way.
Yeah.
Like, in a way, you know, I generally don't mind, you know, when they fuck with character designs a little, especially, like, the Tellarites, because who knows? And, you know, in streaming Trek, they're basically just Warthog people, which is, you know, fine, whatever, but I did like what Enterprise did. Mm.
I think personality-wise, like, I liked the Tellarite captain.
He was fun.
Yeah, I liked him. I didn't like him.
But here's the thing. I kind of didn't want to like him because he's Tellarite. I kind of wish he was a little more ornery, you know?
Well, he's a Tellarite.
Some of that was a ruse, I thought.
Well, yeah, I think, yeah, at the beginning when he's, like, trying to trick Archer into like, coming...
You know, oh, come on, I'll show you where to go for Shore Leave. Like, yeah, I'll be your best friend.
But I kind of wish that even Archer's when he like, was...
friend?
Even when he was, like, later in the episode kind of being nice to Archer, I wish he was still kind of an asshole.
Yeah, look, turns out they're not a monoculture. But also you could argue maybe this is a guy who, like, the fight's been kind of beaten out of him by his situation.
Yeah, he's doing a job that's well below his dignity.
Yeah, I thought they did well with what little we saw of the character to establish this is someone who's been trodden upon, who's had his ship taken, who feels terrible, and his, you know, whose brother blames him specifically.
Yeah.
Like, he feels guilty all the time, and the only way he can try to get money back is this bounty thing, which he doesn't even like doing.
Yeah.
I just didn't see any reason for this character to have been Tellarite.
Because they like Tellarite.
Well, I get... Well, yes,
because
I
they
know,
didn't
like,
want to do another Klingon.
But, like, other than, like, the makeup, which was very good, give something distinctive about him to make him a Tellarite.
That's true. They do say, I think someone's saying, like, at the beginning, like, oh, yeah, in Tellarite culture, arguing is basically an art form.
And yeah.
Treat it like
yeah.
a competition.
And maybe Archer uses that knowledge to bring him to his side.
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to just appealing to
but
his...
But is that just stereotyping?
I think that's fine. It's Star Trek. They're aliens. We stereotype constantly.
That's true. Especially Vulcans.
Vulcans, Klingons, all of them.
Yeah, I do feel like it's, again, when we do see Tellarites in the newer shows, with the exception of Jankum, but again, you can argue that he's gone a little crazy, they are a more grumpy group. They do kind of bring that out more when Tellarites do appear.
Mm. Well, I liked this one.
Yeah, I did like him, and I liked the actor. I thought he did a good job.
I genuinely was annoyed at Archer for breaking his ship. It's like, I mean, I get it, you're trying to escape, but come on, he seems all right. Let him bring you to the Klingons, you deserve it, you're legally annoying.
Speaking of actors too, try as they might, you can put on any level layer of makeup. You cannot hide Gowron from me.
I will give you this: his eyes were pretty well. Like, I think it was because
they designed the makeup so that
he had to look up. Yeah,
yeah. So you wouldn't necessarily, but you could. It was. Yeah.
His chin is very distinctive as a thing. He's got a very distinctive chin that they did not hide. But yeah, I saw his name in the opening credits, and I was waiting for him, and it's like, there he is.
Yeah, it's also the voice. He has the one voice. He doesn't really do other voices.
He masked it pretty well. Like, he didn't
really?
Sound...
Really?
Oh, no, I thought he didn't sound...
Like, immediately he says, like, oh, or else you will experience peace!
I mean, yeah, there were definitely elements there, but he also, like, didn't just do his Gowron voice. He did play with it a little.
Yeah, it was, yeah, but it, yeah, it's still so, it's still him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, Martok a couple weeks ago, right?
Well, it's a little less obvious than Martok, at least, because he's not a Klingon again. Yeah. He's at least a different alien. Which we've never seen before or since, I think.
That's fine.
Big bulbous... Yeah, no, nothing wrong with it. It's kind of fun. Big bulbous head, the weird stringy hair. Very, I don't know. Kind of 50s sci-fi with money.
But yeah, I don't know. I thought the, you know, when they had to land on that planet and Archer damaged the ship on purpose, I thought that was a good Archer thing.
Yeah, it looked like a little ruse.
Because, like, you could think... You would think intuitively that, no, he would actually be trying to fix the ship. But then he actually is like, you think I actually want to fix this shit? You're taking me to my execution. Fuck you.
He, like, as I remember thinking about this, and he actually weaponized his archerness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he got the guy to trust him by just being archer. But it worked. And when he was, you know, before he revealed what he was really up to, Caitlin was like, Archer managed to find the Tellarite archer.
He did. He found it. And also, like, Skalar says that, you know, the bounty will be the same if you're brought in alive or dead. And I'm just yelling, kill him then! Kill him!
And then...
But then the two Klingons, who, when Archer is running amok on the Klingon ship, says, no, they want him alive. And I said, since when?
Yeah, I didn't think of that.
No, but it's better to get him alive, because then you can torture him to death.
Yeah, I mean, I think, definitely, they would prefer to send him back to Rurapente. Just to... get under his skin a little. But again, the Klingons, like, fucking, we were talking a few weeks ago about how shitty the Klingons are in this era. They fucking lied about the bounty.
Yeah.
You said it's 9,000, and now it's 6.
They are without honor.
But then again, I also realized that maybe was that, you know, these guys who are doing the pickup are given 6, and then they're going to go collect the 9.
I also wonder, though, if a lot of this, like, if this isn't just a Duras thing. Because we know that he went to jail because he... Like, that whole thing was because he bitched Duras.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised.
It is a Duras
like,
move.
Like, if this whole thing is just like, okay, we got to get this guy back.
Yeah.
How do the Vulcans and the humans and whoever else not seem to know there's a bounty on Archer's head? Has this information been traveling around? Because, you know, these bounty hunters have figured
it out.
Maybe
they're not keyed into the bounty.
They feed. Should be.
Oh, they should. Well,
T'Pol is the one who got him out of that jam. Well,
I'm guessing that that Earth, I'm sure, does not have an intelligence.
And the Vulcans are like, yeah, he'll let him get killed.
I mean, that is this good. And then, like, the Vulcans probably do know about it, but because nobody explicitly asked, if they didn't mention it.
It's one of two things. Either it's that, which is fucking funny, or two, they're just too busy. All their intelligence apparatus is just tuned to glaring at the Andorians.
Mm.
And yes, humanity definitely... Fucking Starfleet intelligence is barely functional by the 24th century. It definitely doesn't work right now.
Yeah. And they're also out pretty far, too, so... Who knows?
Yeah. But I think that actually lends credence to your theory that it's not an official government thing. Yeah. Because really, I think if you are the government... You don't want anyone to know there was an escape from Rurapente.
Oh, the government of Kronos.
Yeah. They're just like, when people are like, what happened to Archer? Died. But people say that, nope, that's his brother. He has a brother? Sure. Prove me wrong. That's his brother, Tomathan Archer.
Tomathan.
Man. See, because here's the other thing. Is I think if it were... Like, I would see the Klingons doing their own dirty work. Like, sending bounty hunters seems a little like a bitch move.
That seems like a Duras move.
That's a Duras move. You know what I wish, though? I wish the... Oh, man. Now I'm like... Although I did like the Tellarite actor, I kind of wish that it was a Klingon bounty hunter, and I wish it was Tony Todd.
Well, that's because you just love Tony Todd.
I know, but wouldn't Tony Todd have been great as,
always. Tony Todd should have been Jonathan Archer.
Yes. Oh, Tony Todd could have been his rival pilot.
Oh, he could have been Robinson. Oh, I would
Except there is no world where I believe the fight lasts more than 2 seconds.
Speaking of the fight lasting more than 2 seconds, Archer gets out of his prison cell and fisticuffs with, like, 5 Klingons and doesn't get killed.
Yeah.
And, like, and the plot armor is so thick.
He shoots them with a disruptor, which doesn't have a stun.
Does not. No, I was thinking that.
If the Klingons were pissed off before,
oh, yeah.
They are fucking livid.
Oh, and T'Pol has stated before that Klingon ships don't have escape pods.
Yeah, I thought that too. It's like, wait a minute.
But here's the thing. This didn't look like
this was a Duras move.
Well, it was also just not a normal Klingon ship.
It was a little weird. But it did have the big, like, nose gun thing going on.
I'm wondering if this was just, like, a freighter ship, though. Maybe that's...
Another prison transport.
Like, that's why, the Klingons on the ship were ill-equipped to handle a single human.
A single milquetoast human. Oh,
so, like, they weren't warriors. They were like, I'm just a fucking cargo loader. What the shit? Why am I dealing with this violent human? Oh my god, I'm dead.
Yeah, if last episode was the episode where Archer should have been systematically drummed out of the NX program, then this should have been the episode where he gets slaughtered and torn apart by Klingons.
Yeah.
Except that he's the lead of the show.
Here's one thing.
It's good to be the lead of the show.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, it's still,
it's good to be the king.
Fucking episode. The Silver Bloods episode, the second one.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, this is what happens if Star Trek characters don't have plot armor.
Oh, so good.
I love and hate it in equal measure because it makes me so sad, which is its point. But, oh. That, again, that stuck with me. I remember that episode from 20 years ago. Here's one thing that didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah,
though. Good.
Why did the bounty hunter have that little kit he gave Archer? Like, imagine...
The lockpicking kit?
That was built specifically... Like, he had special cuffs that can be undone with your mouth and then has the lockpick built in. Like, why would you have that? Imagine accidentally giving that to a prisoner you didn't mean to give it to? Like... Again, it was...
Maybe he just does a Houdini routine every so often for fun.
Okay, there we go. He's a part-time... That's the thing he didn't mention. He's like, all right, I'll talk about the bounty hunting, but the job I really don't want to discuss is the party magician clown.
I love it.
Oh, here's a thought, though. Here's a reason why you might do that. Star Wars.
He really likes Star Wars?
No. But let's say that your Mark is incarcerated,
mm-hmm.
and you want to... get them out so that you can bring them to, you know, whoever's paying you.
And if, yeah, maybe the mark is even like, I would rather go to the person that has paid you for me than the people I'm currently with.
Right. So that you would do.
So it's like putting a quarter on a string to trick a vending machine.
You put your...
And something bad happens.
You get yourself arrested in those cuffs. Oh, okay, yes. Which you can get out of, but you know, like in Star Wars with Chewbacca.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
It's a stretch, but I agree. It is weird that he had those cuffs.
Yeah, I have a great note near the top of my card, which was when Skalar was getting away with Archer and somebody. Reed, perhaps.
Sure.
Did Reed get a line? Who knows?
I know he got to blow some shit up, so he was happy.
Yeah, he's like, the emergency clams. And I wrote, the emergency clams, they do nothing.
Yes, it was Reed. Activate, or I think maybe they told Reed to activate them. Because I remember thinking, like, your emergency clams suck. Because they didn't work a few weeks ago,
right,
too,
yeah,
I think.
It's the goggles, they do nothing.
Well, like, here's the thing. If I was an alien ship, and I had to attach my docking umbilical, whatever the fuck, right? My little
yeah
thing. I would just make that part detachable on my ship's end.
Yeah.
So that, like, if somebody locked themselves to I could just detach that part of my ship and fly away.
It is convenient that there seems to already be a galactic standard for docking rings.
Mm. Oh, true.
Like, I think we way more, and I feel like I can't remember what series it is, but there's definitely some show I saw once where, like, everyone just sort of has, like, a very flexible kind of almost umbilical, more than like a, so that they can just sort of work with each other well enough.
Yeah, it's like those socket wrench tools that work on any shape.
Yeah,
even like a broken screw or something.
Yeah, yeah, like something that's just like, you think they would have more of sort of like an almost a rubberized seal that just kind of, like, you'd expect kind of like a very flexible component between the two hard metal ones.
Mm.
Like, it would make sense that maybe, like, say, human and Vulcan ships, you know, they would have purposely designed, like, you know, the docking...
Here's the adapter.
They got USB-C.
Yeah, they're like, all right, this is what Vulcan hatches are like, I guess we'll use that. And maybe, like, yeah, maybe, like, there's already kind of, like, between these species that already kind of work together a lot. Like, yeah, there isn't the Federation yet, but, like, we trade... So, yeah, there's, like you said, like, there's a standard that sort of worked out through a lot of species, but
Klingons,
it seems
Klingons, meanwhile, have fucking firewire.
Yeah. Yeah, like, they never have an issue of just, like, everyone just has the same ring, which doesn't really make... And that would be a nice little thing to have. Like, occasionally they have to do, like, oh, bust out the Adapto ring or whatever.
There was a... Going back to another...
For All Mankind. I was gonna bring this up. Do it.
There was a whole...
so good.
There was a plot about the... Apollo Soyuz mission,
mm-hmm.
which was it's a real thing that actually happened, but like where they had a Soyuz capsule and an Apollo capsule meet in space and mm-hmm. shake hands.
Yeah,
but like that was a whole thing. Was like, oh, we have to build
an adapter ring
so that these things can actually dock together.
Yeah, and this was the same planet mm-hmm. with people that just didn't like each other.
Yeah, and it was like a whole fucking project. Like, it was a huge deal to design this freaking thing, and like each side was like, oh no, we should go with the Soviet standard. And, no, we're gonna go with the NASA standard. No, Soviet, NASA.
Meanwhile, someone fucks up the conversion from Imperial to metric, and
always measure in bananas. Yeah. That's the trick.
Yeah, well, that happened what? I feel like when I was in high school or college, like this huge NASA mission. Like, it was like an unmanned probe to, I want to say, Mars or something.
Yeah, I think it was a lander.
And it fucked up because somebody screwed up the conversion into metric.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but yeah, I think after that, it was like a vendor. It was like a specific NASA vendor, like Lockheed or somebody had like...
Fucking Lockheed.
Didn't get... I don't know if it was Lockheed, but...
I mean, like, fuck them anyway.
Sure. But some NASA vendor was operating in Imperial and... NASA and everybody else is operating in metric, and it didn't work.
Engineering is operating in Imperial. Mm-hmm. It's insane. I thought that the sciences defaulted to metric, even in this country.
Well, after that, they made it a thing. It's like, yeah, no, we're just using metric for anything space related. It's
How
what it's going to be.
Many football games.
The United States, as you may or may not know, is officially on the metric system.
No, I know. Like, it's, yeah, the legal, 70s.
Yeah, in the 70s, they passed a law that said official standards and measurements of the United States are based in metric.
And everyone laughed, and we went on our merry way.
The soda industry was like, yeah, let's do it. 2-liter bottle. And no, everybody else is like, yeah, fuck that. Nah.
Oh, God. It's a mess. I mean, here's the thing. I don't care what system we use, because I am terrible at estimating the length of things anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, I can't tell if that's a foot. I can't tell if it's... I don't know how many centimeters are in a foot. But I can't tell if it's that either, so I don't care. Call it whatever. I'm still not going to know how big anything is without measuring.
Yes, it is one banana long, this banana. Yeah. The only remaining notes I have are on the B-plot.
Yeah, well...
God damn it. Yeah. This is why I fucking hate Ponfar. And they, yep. I would happily throw a muck time into a volcano to get rid of any other Ponfar, because it wasn't good enough to warrant this.
I mean... In this episode, especially, like, even so before bad. We got to the Ponfar, they had already fucked it because they were in the decon chamber.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like take two things that are awful.
My prescription is more gel.
Yeah, take two With things that fucks. Are awful on their own, the decon chamber and Ponfar, and combine them into a fucking nexus of shit.
Oh, but notice that they've installed a curtain in the decon room now.
Oh, I noticed that right away, and then T'Pol actually brings it up. And I was like, oh, okay, so...
And Phlox's answer is, because only I may peep! No one else!
Well, and then it's like, oh, I installed this curtain, but we still need to rub each other... Because,
yeah.
Like, I didn't also get, like, a rag on a stick.
Yeah, like, apparently during World War III, like, back scrubber technology was lost.
Or, like, why isn't the decon gel a spray? For the last fucking time, why isn't it just you stand in, like, a little shower shell stall with your arms up and
it goes,
you get sprayed down and then you hang out for a while? Like, why does it have to be a fucking goo that is erotically rubbed on the body?
Because they got Jolene Blaylock.
Oh, Jake. I know. But also, I have to give them some credit. I guess Roxanne or whatever for actually showing some grotesque close-ups of Phlox rubbing God. The gel on himself.
Those horrible toenails.
It doesn't need it.
Like, a little more equal opportunity than just... Exploiting
yes,
Jolene.
The women got to. Oh no, we the got women. To cringe too. Great.
Yeah, fair. Everyone got disgusting and like.
Except the 13-year-old boys are like, oh no, but, boobies.
Well, yeah, 13-year-old boys love the boobies. Was there anybody that's like, oh yeah, I want to see more of Phlox's feet and his fucking ribbed spine? Ooh yeah.
Probably.
Speaking of Jolene,
I'm
going
to say probably.
I actually noticed it in the previous episode. Meant to bring it up. But I'll bring it up now because we're talking about her. She has great eyebrow control. Mm. That's why she was a good choice for a Vulcan. Very active eyebrows, which is key for a good Vulcan.
It is. Ethan Peck, take note.
Eyebrows.
And like, I think
okay,
she did a fine job.
Yeah, she was just given trash to work with again.
I thought that the bit with Reed where like he has to chase her down and then she tries to seduce him and then...
You like my bum, right?
And then when he's not... Like, honestly, by the time she got within 30 centimeters of him...
We're doing banana length. Now,
yeah. He would already be nude. Like, it's completely unrealistic that they didn't bang.
I was going, shoot her! Shoot her! And then they finally did.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know
yeah,
why.
You have stun setting. Always
just,
shoot.
Just straight away.
Always. Every time.
Also, yeah. Like, when Phlox was reporting that, like... She's out and she's irrational. Why didn't he also be like, also she's fucking horny as shit?
Because she asked him not to.
But it's very pertinent. Like, at least tell Reed, because it's pertinent information.
No,
because
then he definitely would. He would have just been running in there in, like, literally just his Starfleet issue fucking tank top and
nothing else.
what are they called? Boxer briefs. But still the helmet for some reason, even though it's pointless at this stage.
True.
But if you just say she's irrational, shoot her
yeah,
on sight.
Shoot on sight, yeah.
Then you don't have to say anything more than that.
And plus, and now, like, at the end when she's like, oh, I didn't do anything embarrassing, did I? Well, you did try to hump Reed a little. So that's going to be awkward on your next duty shift, but...
At least Archer wasn't here. Because then I'd be reminding him constantly that he has a thing for you.
But yeah, not
just
too
embarrassing.
Much to say about
just an embarrassing plot because
so bad.
First off, T'Pol is like 70 years old, or possibly more. I forget how old when it's established how old she is, but just based on looking at her page on Memory Alpha, she is at least 70 something years old. And she's saying, oh, this isn't my time. And I'm like, I didn't even know women could get Ponfar. So already the Enterprise writers are deciding they need the sexy.
Also previously established that it's an affliction of the males. Mm-hmm. Like, that's been established. Like, or at least, you know, when Savick is explaining it to David in 3, she goes, every 7 years, Vulcan males, I think. Or somebody says Vulcan males. At some point.
Mm.
Maybe it's not Savick. But at some point, I remember being distinctly established that it's Vulcan males get this thing every 7 years.
Right, right.
So now we're throwing women into the mix just because we happen to have a sexy female Vulcan.
Yeah.
Female Vulcan.
And then Roxanne and Jolene can gossip about it later. And be like, oh, I had Ponfar too. Mine was brought on by that creep Vorik.
See, this is Berman. So Berman-y. It's like, okay, we went through all of Voyager and we couldn't figure out a way to have the Borg be horny. So, you know, we had to have it so that...
Everyone else is sexualized. And she didn't care.
But now we have a way to make her horny because of Ponfar. So we can do it. We can finally do it.
And also, we'll state that this is a fake Ponfar in case you want to make it happen for real later.
Well, it's very much like the...
Elogium.
The Elogium, yeah. Where it's like, oh...
Which luckily never came up again.
Yeah, which never came up again. But it's like, oh, yeah, we have a reason to make Kes horny for some reason. Let's do the same fucking thing again.
I hate Rick Berman.
Yeah, I hate all of this. I hate that it's... Flocks, because he seems, I mean, granted, I give him credit for, like, drawing the line, but also I'm very confused when a couple weeks ago he was advocating that Trip fuck his wife. So it's like, I don't understand you at all, sir.
Well, because his wife was in control of her faculties and wanted to fuck him.
But he didn't want to fuck her.
No, but it also seems like Flocks being... a doctor and a man of science would have recognized that the only way to cure a Ponfar is to take it to its conclusion.
Well, I don't know if he knew necessarily what the deal was, because I think he was saying he was going to try to find a serum.
Cat smells like cat food.
He ate cat food. That's what he does.
I know, but he reeks.
Well, it's the new food that does have a more pungent odor to it. Mm. Like, good job, Boyd.
He does love that food.
He loves it. Good. What was I just saying? Oh, yeah. Phlox was trying to create some kind of a repressing serum or some shit to make her stop accosting him constantly.
Yeah, honestly, I appreciate... because she said, like, you know, you can fix this by just boning down with me. And good for him going, no. No.
Yeah. That's something I do give him credit for.
Yeah,
but at
least, like, get a vibrator or something in there.
We were talking about that. Like, how does masturbation not count?
Didn't it work for Tuvok? Didn't he go in the holodeck?
Yeah, he went in the holodeck and it was fine.
Yeah, so what the fuck?
But Tuvok also is more mentally capable of something than Vorik, that dick.
Also, maybe you could argue because it was triggered by this disease, it wouldn't have worked for reasons. Microbe, whatever.
Either way, yeah, I think it's...
Dumb.
Yeah. I think it's very dumb.
So dumb.
And, like, it's lazy.
I know. And she's wearing her underwear the whole time just for the peepers at home.
Yeah, it would be interesting if like, Ponfar manifest... like, you could still say it's Ponfar, maybe. But maybe it manifests differently. Like, maybe guys get really horny, but women just get really fucking nasty. And just, like, not nasty in a good way, but, like...
Not the fun kind.
Not the fun kind of nasty, but, like... she wants to kill everybody. And, like, and then you could have, like...
She throws soup.
You could, like... because I thought the scene where they were hunting her or, like, trying to find her on the ship was actually... there was a little bit of tension for Enterprise episode. I was like, oh, what's going to happen?
Which one of them will shoot her?
What if the whole episode was T'Pol is loose on the ship and she's in fucking... and she's in a fucking Vulcan murder trance... and like
in her underwear still.
In her well no she
well like I said plans. Then again if we just it still doesn't have to be Ponfar, it can just be that the bug broke her emotional control and yeah that's what I say murder trance
it's,
sure.
It's a little bit Bendy syndrome
yeah
anyway Yeah, lazy, stupid, boring.
Oh, awful.
Sexist.
Sexist. Not sexy.
Yeah, just repulsive.
Deeply.
The whole time, it's only cringe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, watching Phlox rub goo on T'Pol and vice versa is not sexy.
No.
It's there just to titillate. Yeah, it's a titillating endeavor, and that's disgusting.
Yeah, no, whenever Enterprise tries to be sexy, it fails.
I mean, Star Trek does that an awful lot. True. Hey, as we're going to talk about in our Blab Tiffany today!
Wait, what?
What's
that going to do with sexiness? Because I thought we were talking about Julian Bashir.
You're not a Julian Bashir guy?
I'm not. He's fucking gross.
Many of his attempts, at least in the early seasons, are anti-sexy.
But why don't we start with the top bits?
Yay, yeah, the sexy bits!
Velour.
Okay, I'll go.
Go, Jake, go.
These are probably pretty predictable. I didn't feel like being creative and coming up with actual thoughtful ones. But curing or figuring out the cure for the quickening.
Yay.
The quickening.
I mean, granted, it wasn't really a cure per se, but...
Well,
saving the one baby.
Well, yeah, but the cure... There was a treatment, but the treatment didn't cure the mother. It only cured the offspring. So he invented that.
Yes, he invented that.
So that's good. Like, he cured it for the next generation. All right. Anyway, this one I was kind of like, is this good or bad? But I settled on good. And that's his valiant attempt to treat the Ketracel White dependency.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. I would say that's good.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it?
Well, because, like, he was, you know...
O'Brien was a little bitch.
Yeah, O'Brien was the bitch. But, yeah, definitely, you know, he tried his best. He put an effort in. And then, like, when it didn't work, he just had to kill everybody, as you do. Oh, not him.
Well, he was going to keep trying until O'Brien blew up his lab.
Yeah.
Badass.
In similar vein, even though he didn't specifically cure it, he did go, I think, above and beyond the role of a doctor when he pursued the treatment for Garrick in The Wire.
Wow, mm-hmm. You just picked my three tops as well. So.
That's why I said I wasn't being creative.
Yeah,
these are predictable.
These are very great Julian moments.
His meeting with an Aberrantane mm-hmm. was really cool.
Yeah, it's a good scene. The Wire was on my list. Because, of course.
Oh, cool. Yeah, great. They love each other, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, God, everything else just left my head. Wait, I had it right. Wait, I just wanted to write these things down more often.
You can wait. Cue the elevator music.
Do-do-do-do-do. Oh, not, or rather, you know, I can't remember if he specifically said he wouldn't do it, or at least talked Kira out of just basically turning Barile into a robot.
Yes, yes. Mm. He's the one that said, like, he'd be a Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
There would be none of him left.
Whatever was left would not be
broken. Yeah, not letting her do that, or at least talking her out of it.
One more.
Yeah, I had it, too. What the fuck was it?
That's why I ran him down.
Yeah, I meant to, but my morning got all fucked up. I was going to sit down and write it down when I inevitably wasn't. Barile, The Wire, and... Because I've been thinking of the Ketracel White one, but then found something else I liked.
Was it something to do with Jadzia? I have a lot of Jadzia moments.
No. Most of his stuff with Jadzia is him hitting on her, and that's...
Was it him and Miles?
They are great.
It's our most riveting spotlight yet.
Yeah, I'll be cutting a lot of this silence, by which I mean all of it. Oh god, what the fuck was my third one?
Should I go, and then I can just show you all of my spares and see, is this it? Is this it?
Yeah, let's go with that. If I suddenly remember before you say it, I'll just go, blah!
That's verbatim. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Julian did. I've got a couple good Julian moments. We'll see, other than the ones that I've already been stated, which are also very good Julian moments. I'm going to start with a very sweet scene, the I Love You Miles scene from Extreme Measures, the one good part of that horrible episode. I really liked that, but I hate the rest of it, as you'll see, I'm sure, in a moment when we switch over to our worst moments.
Which one's Extreme Measures?
Murdering
Sloan. Oh, to be sure.
Yep. I'm also going to go with, even though, like, because he spent so much of the early seasons creeping on Jadzia.
So much.
But there's such a great moment in Starship Down when he's keeping her warm when she's, when they're freezing to death in a lift or something. And he basically, he also, like, reflects and says, huh, a couple years ago, if I were in this moment, I would have a boner. But right now, our friendship has grown that I'm mostly trying to doctor. Go, Julian.
I've grown up.
I'm a big boy now.
Hurrah! I'm 30.
And the last one I'm gonna give to another Section 31 thing, and that's when he figures out the Section 31 ruse eventually, after going how many Inception levels deep in Inquisition. Just because that's when the Section 31 was still interesting, and he was good in that.
Yeah.
Anything come to mind yet, Chris? You want a bunch of spares?
Yeah, let's go through the spares.
Let's go through some spares.
It's one of the spares.
He stands up to the Jem'Hadar when he's imprisoned by Inferno's light, which is a good Julian moment.
Mm-hmm.
Another time when he keeps Dax alive fucking somehow is in Invasive Procedures when Varete steals the symbiont.
That's right.
And Jadzia should have fucking died.
Oh, yes.
And somehow Julian kept her alive.
He's a good doctor.
Speaking of Jadzia, he also chaperones her and Lenora on their date in Rejoined because he's a very good friend.
Mm.
Nothing yet, Chris?
No.
Oh, how about this one? This one might be a good one that you'd like. He tries really, really hard in Nor the Battle to the Strong to keep Jake alive.
That's right, he does. That's a good episode.
That's a great episode. A couple little ones. He also has a very adult breakup with Leeta.
Yeah.
Which is very nice for him.
And then he goes hog wild on Risa.
Mm-hmm. He definitely does. Well, Leeta pines for Rom like a weirdo.
And Worf does other stupid shit.
Oh, God, that episode. And last little one, reminding Sisko to take his contraception, even though Sisko didn't do it.
Son of a bee.
I can't remember my third one. I'll just slot in the Catrachel White one because I'd been thinking
that is a good
of doing
one.
It initially anyway.
That's such a good episode.
I swear I'd come up with a different one, though.
Well, if you think of it, let me know. It may make the blog because you're all following this on the blog as well.
Mm.
It's a good time.
But yeah, so a lot of the stuff you mentioned was stuff that occurred to me as well. When did he fuck up, Jake?
He fucked up.
Oh, God.
So much.
All right, well, to start with, I mean, this isn't so much a bad him moment as it is of just a terrible episode that he happened to be a focus on. But I'm just going to say turning 30.
And being a whiny twerp about it.
Being a whiny fucking twerp
so
about
whiny.
It. And really, this is just a stand-in for whatever the fuck happened in Distant Voices.
That was...
I'm also going to bring up Invasive Procedures.
On the bad list?
On the bad list.
What did he do in Invasive Procedures that was bad?
He killed the fuck out of Sloan.
That's not Invasive Procedures. Oh, that's Extreme Measures.
Extreme Measures. God damn it. I'm sorry. You're right. I'm
since no. He's... Otherwise, yes, agree.
Yeah. Yeah, murdering Sloane.
Yep.
Asshole. Technically, I guess Sloane committed suicide.
But Julian forced him to.
Julian did force him to. And whatever they did in that was horrible. And, like, speaking of more questionable ethics, my third item is questionable ethics.
Mm-hmm.
And
which one?
To illustrate this, I'm going to choose, I have a couple, but the one I'm going to specifically call out is his weird fucking relationship with Serena.
Yeah.
In Chrysalis.
Oh, so gross.
The mute girl who he treats and
I fixed
bangs.
You, now I can fuck you.
So, yeah, one of mine was that.
Yep.
The
good.
Other was Melora.
Yeah, that was my backup.
Also,
that
also
was my backup.
Wildly inappropriate. Like, I know they're kind of the same kind of thing, but I don't care. He did it twice. They're separate items.
It's weird that it happened twice.
Well, also, I don't know. I had both of those, and I chose Serena over Melora just because, like, Melora was physically disabled, and Serena was mentally disabled.
Yeah, Melora still had the ability to consent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, they were. There's definitely different levels.
But it's
either
still
way,
disgusting.
They were wildly inappropriate relationships to have with patients.
He's like, no, but I stopped having her as my patient, Julian. It's still no, don't. There's rules about this. I know.
You gotta wait at least a year, I think. Or something, I don't know. And again, to bring up the terrific trio, the time he was gonna just sell out the Federation to the Dominion because him and his buddies decided they couldn't win the war.
And statistical probabilities.
From statistical... Oh, wow, that's a good... I didn't think of that one.
Yeah, they're just like, oh my god, their math is right. I'm not going to tell anyone except the Dominion.
Wait, so which one was Invasive Procedures?
Invasive Procedures was when Varad takes the death.
Oh, that's right. Very similarly named episodes.
Yes. At least they weren't the same title as Star Trek and Zovana, with just one word difference.
True.
Invasive Procedures. Invasive Procedure.
Yeah. More invasive, more procedure.
Invasive procedures. What? Invasive proceduras.
Invasive Procedures 3, Tokyo Drift.
This time it's personal.
Right, I had a bunch of overlap, but let's go with being a little turd when he's playing O'Brien in racquetball in Rivals.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, he was so insufferable.
Yeah, that's kind of before they were buddies, right?
Oh, yeah. Miles detested this man.
But I gotta give him one bit of credit there, is that, like, he deliberately started to lose just so he wouldn't inadvertently kill Miles.
That's when you just say, I don't want to play.
He tried
You're
that.
You're allowed.
He tried that. Miles wouldn't let him.
Well, you can walk out.
And we gotta remember,
have legs.
He had to, at that point, be doubly holding back, because he'd already been holding back because he knows he's secretly augmented.
Yeah.
So he had to double rein himself in.
Anyway, he was obnoxious the whole time, though. Regardless of if he didn't let O'Brien die or not.
Yes.
Still the worst. Oh boy, you know how a moment ago we were giving him so much credit for drawing the line with when to keep Beryl alive? Oh no, he decides, nope, I don't have any medical ethics. Let's wipe Curtin's memory.
Yeah, I forgot it. How did I forget that one?
Oh, that one's so uncomfortable and I really dislike it, although I did get to write that great fanfic about it.
True.
Check it out on the SoundCloud.
Even though so many people are involved, I just think of it so much as a Worf thing that I forget. Oh yeah, a lot of people had to be involved in that.
Yeah. Like Jadzio suggested it. Yeah. Worf let it happen. Bashir performed the procedure. It's like, oh god, all of this is fucking awful.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Kern. Mm. And now Worf is running around the galaxy with his honor back, and Kern is stuck being a farmer or some shit. Bullshit. But no, the number one horrible thing that Julian did on Deep Space Nine was introducing Vic Fontaine to the station.
No, Vic's great. Come on.
I will defend Vic for Caitlin, who can't be here, because I know Vic grew on her to the extent that she bought one of the actor's albums.
I mean, the Vic episodes are very hit or miss.
Yeah.
Vic himself is fine.
This is specifically in his way.
Yes.
When it was the worst.
Oh, yeah, his way is terrible.
Alright, do you guys have any honorable mentions?
My only one was Melora, which...
Yeah,
which
you guys covered, I think, yeah. Everything.
I don't know. I think the constant hitting on Jadzia was terrible. I think how he regressed a little before her death, when he was really mopey about her getting married and having a kid, and then moping after her death, when he's like, oh no, Worf, even though she was your wife, I'm gonna mope harder. Mm. Julian, stop it.
Yeah, I had considered that as well.
And now I'm gonna creep on Ezri.
Yeah, he did a little creeping, but then they ended up actually getting together.
And it was gross!
Yeah, which is gross. But like it takes, you know, that's one where it's not like a doctor-patient thing.
It's a doctor-doctor thing.
It's a doctor-doctor. So I don't know. I don't have as much of a problem with the fact that they got together, other than the fact that I think that's bad judgment on Ezri's part.
Deeply.
And she's probably... But then again, she also has, as we've talked about a lot, is...
Poor judgment.
Well, she's also just completely unprepared to be joined and hasn't gotten, like, the talking
so
to.
So Julian shouldn't be fucking...
So Julian probably should have stopped... And been like, this is probably not what you really want.
No, this is Jadzia whispering in your ear.
Yeah.
Or
but then again, Zen's taking her agency away. That's saying you're not a big girl and you don't know how. You
that's
can't
the problem.
What if
visions.
Julian fixes her first? Oh no!
That's the problem. Is like we don't know where the line is. We don't know how in control she is of her personalities yet.
I mean, really, Julian just probably should have. On his own, just decided, I'm not going to go for this.
Well, no, first of all, he has a perfectly good boyfriend. So, I mean, clearly
he's got
they
two good boyfriends.
Clearly they've got an open relationship, but...
You know, he's got two boyfriends, one of which is married, but, you know, that can change.
Yeah, that will change, because Keiko will leave him.
Oh my god. Next week!
Oh boy! Good segue, Chris!
Next week! Fuck it! We're watching a whole new show! The Expanse! Oh, no, wait, that's apparently an episode of Enterprise. It is the season 2 finale somehow.
Wow, yeah, we're already there. Good, we're halfway through Enterprise.
Living on a prayer. And after that, it's the Zindi. Which also means next week, I imagine, instead of a Deep Space Nine character, we will be wrapping season 2.
That's correct.
So
prepare for that.
Look forward to that. Our big list of Dear God, These Suck, and our list of These'll Do on the Enterprise Curve. Follow us on Facebook, SoundCloud, and Tumblr. Especially Tumblr, that's where, you know, the best stuff is.
Go check out all the great Julian pics.
Yeah, it's going to be some photos of him probably in racquetball gear.
Oh, definitely.
Maybe one of him in a tuxedo.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good idea.
See what Ames goes with. Maybe for fun, she'll throw in one of that guy who looks a lot like him from Battlestar Galactica, just to see if you catch it. Until then, this has been Chris.
This has been Ames.
This is always Jake. That guy's also in Star Trek Picard, don't forget.
That's true. Who is our character next week?
Julian Bashir.
Oh boy.
Fucking Ezri.
Oh, expect that moment I mentioned a moment to come up again.
Jason
sure
Jadzia.
Next week. Yes, until then.
Being a fucking bitch about the Carrington Award. There we go. I've done my Julian Bashir part.
All right, Caitlin Snick next week.
It
off.
Is the one with Perfect. Keith Carradine.
Who is that? Caitlin Snick next week.